Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
To hear what your plans are. If you are elected, what would you do on day one in the White House?
Well, there are a number of things. I will tell you, first and foremost, one of my highest priorities is to do what we can to support and strengthen the middle class. When I look at the aspirations, the goals, the ambitions of the American people, I think that people are ready for a new way forward. In a way that generations of Americans have been fueled by hope and by optimism.
So I wasn't prepared for that question. What are you going to do on day one? You guys come up with the craziest things that nobody could ever possibly predict. You would ask me in a sit-down, pre-taped, edited interview. I'm going to, totally fix the middle class or something. I don't know. Something. So ask me again.
Really dividing our nation, and I think people are ready to turn the page on that.
So what would you do day one?
Day one, it's...
I was going to come up with 10 questions, but instead I could come up with just 3 and keep asking them until she's going to answer them. Which means I could come up with just 1 and ask it until she answers it.
Really dividing our nation, and I think people are ready to turn the page on that.
So what would you do day one?
Day one?
I'm sorry. I love this. She pivots from what are you going to do on day one to Trump is evil. And Dana Bash is like, but seriously, on day one, what are you going to do? Listen to how she's answering. So she's continuing to just, Trump is dead. Okay, and then...
Really dividing our nation, and I think people are ready to turn the page on that.
So what would you do day one?
Day one, it's going to be about, one, implementing my plan for what I call an opportunity economy. I've already laid out a number of proposals in that regard, which include what we're going to do to bring down the cost of everyday goods, what we're going to do to invest in America's small businesses, what we're going to do to invest in families, for example, extending the child tax credit to $6,000 for families for the first year of their child's life to help them buy a car seat, to help them buy baby clothes, a crib.
Okay. So we're like a minute and a half into the interview, and she's actually finally given a thing that she wants to do on day one. She's going to implement the child tax credit for $6,000 for first-time children, which is not something she can do because that takes Congress. But okay, fine. So she's going to bring down the prices of goods that are out of control with inflation, like, for example, baby products, by giving people money to spend on products that are out of control with prices because of inflation. So what she's going to do, if this were actually possible for a president to do, is she's going to give people a bunch of money to spend on baby products so that we can bring down the price of baby products. Okay, anybody ever take, I don't know, economics 101? just checking. I mean, clearly she hasn't. Okay, but just seeing if anybody else has. So if you have a market in which prices are up and you add demand to that market by telling people, here's a bunch of money, use it on these products, what will happen to prices of products in the market that you just inflated the money supply towards? It's not a trick question. I mean, it's apparently too complicated for the vice president, but it's not a trick question. It will increase those prices. They will go up. Oh, by the way, I love this. Again, this is her first interview. Okay, CNN, edited, pre-taped. What will you do on day one? The middle class and prices and stuff and the child tax credit for $6,000. Oh, whose idea was that? J.D. Vance. That was his plan. Only, no, to be fair, he proposed it at $5,000. And she said, oh, I can out-promise you. by the way, I'm not against the child tax credit. I like the child tax credit. I have benefited from the child tax credit. I've got three of those suckers. You know? But the notion that what you can do is bring down prices in a market by inflating the money supply into that market, that's the part that that she said. Oh, she doesn't just say it there. Listen, this goes on.
You are right. Prices, in particular for groceries, are still too high. The American people know it. I know it.
Okay. True. Good. Correct. And what's your plan?
Which is why my agenda includes what we need to do to bring down the price of groceries. For example, dealing with an issue like price gouging. What we need to do to extend the child tax credit to help young families be able to take care of their children in their most formative years.
Cut down on price gouging. Good luck. That's going to be hard to prove in an inflationary economy, but okay, that's not crazy. But she says the child tax credit, which again does what? Increases the money supply into a market like food where prices are already high. What does she say is her solution to food price inflation? More money! What literally is the definition of inflation? It's actually not that prices go up. It's that money supply expands. So she says the answer to inflation is more money, which is by definition inflation. This is not the only place. This came up again. We need to work on home prices.
We need to do to bring down the cost of housing. My proposal includes what would be a tax credit of $25,000 for first-time home buyers, so they can just have enough to put a down payment on a home, which is part of the American dream and their aspiration, but do it in a way that allows them to actually get on the path to achieving that goal and that dream.
Okay, so let's do baby steps. Housing prices are high. It's hard for people to get into a home for the first time. True. And of course, you know, people who are just starting a family, it's harder for them because they're not at the peak of their income power, right? Okay. Historic problem. It's especially bad right now. Her answer is, we're going to help reduce the price of homes by giving people a $25,000 tax credit so that they can get into a new home easier. If you introduce in the hands of some buyers, namely first-time buyers, a $25,000 additional purchasing power capacity. What have you done to the demand and supply in that market? You have increased demand by increasing money supply into that market. Don't need to beat this nail until you can't see it anymore, but that's inflation by definition, and it will produce inflationary effects on the prices. You're making it easier to buy homes, which means that the price of homes will go up, not down. Oh, and by the way, was there ever a time in this country where we saw that it was hard for people who were struggling to buy houses, especially for the first time, and we tried to make it easier on them by, for example, I don't know, creating incentives that would allow people who would otherwise not be qualified to purchase homes to buy them more easily because of whether it's credit ratings or, you know, prohibiting certain practices or facilitating the flow of money into lower income areas? Have we ever tried this? Do you remember the recession of 2008? Do you remember what started all of that? Wasn't it credit default swaps and high? Yeah, okay, sure. But what was the basis of the issue behind the mortgages that failed that were the underlying equity for those default swaps? And turned out it was all of these unreliable mortgages that were created by a desire to help out people who couldn't qualify for homes on their own. And so we got them into homes they really shouldn't be able to afford. We inflated the supply of money, the demand signal for the homes, okay? That increased the support. That's why the home prices kept going up and up and up. You remember what it was like in like 07, you know, when, you know, buy it today, sell it for $10,000 more tomorrow, like that kind of stuff? What caused all of that? All of the extra demand on homes by people who really shouldn't have been buying homes because they weren't really qualified. So now we're going to give people $25,000 so that they can buy homes for which they're not really qualified. I watched the whole interview, okay? I forced myself to, well, I no, that's not true. I watched the three sections of the interview they published. Whether that's the whole interview, one will never know. They haven't released the entirety of it. We don't know. And why would they release it in three chunks unless there were major edits and things removed? But this was the out-the-gate thing, and it's wrong everywhere you turn. So you say, well, Andrew, I mean, look at the alternative. It's Trump. Okay. Yeah, I know. I have my problems with Trump, okay? But which of these two candidates was good for the economy? You know, which of these two candidates was helpful for things like inflation? Which of these two candidates is going to make it better on your pocketbook? You know, that's, I think I read something that the friend had posted the other day. It said, look, you don't like Trump, I get it. Vote for him and don't invite him for Thanksgiving dinner. You know, that's me. Like, that's where I'm at. And so this notion that somehow, again, is Kamala Harris Biden's vice president and gets credit for things in the Biden White House and therefore also gets blamed for things in the Biden White House? Does she understand basic economics, or is she completely out of her mind on understanding these things? And the answer is she seems to think that you can bring down prices by putting money into a market. And I literally couldn't make up something so obviously dumb. 437-1620. Oh, I mean, aside from, this doesn't even get into all of the issues with inflation per se and the ongoing lie about how they cut inflation. This is why I don't follow a lot of the national politics real carefully, like all the time. You know, this is why I don't report on the stump speeches by the candidates, either candidate, because all it does is make me this person, this angry, snarky, smart-ass, contemptuous person. I don't like being this person, and I feel like both of these candidates make me this person. One just makes me more this person than the other. 437-16. Oh, okay. All right. I'll do one more. I just have to get it out. You ready for this? This is the, you know, Glenn Beck, who went from being a very entertaining radio DJ to being a very entertaining talk show host to being a conspiracy theorist, crazy person, and still sometimes is right about things. He always used to have this expression back in the middle period when he was actually very entertaining. He's like, okay, get out the duct tape and wrap it around your head because it's about to explode. Like, that was always kind of his go-to. This was this one. Okay, you ready?
So you have been vice president for 3.5 years. Yeah. The steps that you're talking about now, why haven't you done them already?
Fair question, right? You've been the vice president. Where have your solutions been?
Well, first of all, we had to recover as an economy, and we have done that. I'm very proud of the work that we have done that has brought inflation down to less than 3%.
Oh, God. Okay. You know, I'm the kind of guy that I can gaslight myself sometimes just because I want to make sure that I remember this right, don't I? You know, I just always want to check the facts. One of the basic resources on the web that I check the most often is the historical inflation rate month by month. Because I feel like when you say things like that, I must be misremembering. So I go look at what the inflation rate is. And if you look at the inflation rate, most recent data is 2.9%. Okay, at the beginning of the year in January, it was 3.1%. January of last year, 2023, it was 6.4%. I believe that was when Biden was president. Already for 2 years. Before that, it was 9.1% in June of 2022. The peak inflation under the Biden administration. It was 7.5% in January of 2022. It was 5.4% in June of 2021. And when Biden took office, it was 1.4%. 1.4. Okay. When Trump took office in 2017, it was 2.5% in January of 2017. He worked it all the way down to 1.4% over the course of 4 years. Biden worked it all the way up from 1.4 to 9.1 and has now successfully managed to work it all the way back down to 2.9, double what it was when he took office. And she says,
well, first of all, we had to recover as an economy, and we have done that. I'm very proud of the work that we have done that has brought inflation down to less than 3%.
You can't claim recovery from your own screw up. Well, you don't know. I mean, I lost $1 million on these bets, but now I've gained back $500,000 on these bets. I had to recover from the bad situation we were in, the hole we were in. I know I created the hole, but all right. See, this is why I cover Milton. I can be nicer about Milton and Santa Rosa County and even Escambia County. Because even as crazy as they are, there's like still something you can see of reasonability in it. This is nothing. 437-1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Oh no, stomach issues again?
Stomach issues?
Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Join the Great Southern Restaurant Group, home to the Fish House, Atlas Oyster House, Jackson's, Angelina's, and Five Sisters tomorrow at 9. On the Pensacola Expert Panel, they'll be discussing the Atlas X Brother Fox Collaboration Dinner, Atlas Beverage Class, Rosh Hashanah at Jackson's, along with Jackson's Cooking Class and Angelina's Supper Club. That's all tomorrow at 9.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Mommy, want to play a game with me and Dad?
Mommy's not feeling good.
You need to vaporize that cold.
Vaporize?
Yeah, with DayQuil VapoCool. It's DayQuil plus a rush of Vicks vapors.
Whoa.
Come on, honey. Let's let Mommy rest.
You guys are amazing. And so is DayQuil VapoCool.
DayQuil VapoCool, the vaporizing daytime coughing, aching, fever, power through your day medicine. And to vaporize sore throat pain, try Vicks VapoCool drops. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
News Radio 92.3 gets you live programming every day from 5 a.m. until 7 p.m. on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Well, always got the diner.
Yeah, we always got the diner.
Good morning, 528 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, hundreds of demonstrators set off smoke bombs at a protest in New York yesterday as they were again protesting for a ceasefire in the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. Of course, all of that after the bodies of six hostages were recovered over the weekend. One person now in custody after four sleeping passengers were shot and killed on a Chicago train. Authorities say the victims died at the scene. Three of the victims died at the scene. The fourth was pronounced dead at a hospital in Chicago. And Andrew, yesterday, the Unfinished Beef special on Netflix.
Yeah.
Did you watch that at all?
No.
Okay, this had to be the craziest thing that I have seen in years. The production, wow. it was shot like it was a UFC event or something. The whole thing was insane. And, well.
Chestnut, Kobayashi, both with personal records. But the 16-time champion is going to walk away an apparent winner.
Apparent.
10 seconds to go as the fans count it down.
I mean, it was insane. The whole thing, 83 hot dogs, beating his old record of 76 in 10
minutes. What did Kobayashi get?
66.
Oh, so it was the demolition.
It was.
I mean, he beat him by 20 dogs.
Yeah, it was insane.
Wow. All right. Well, I missed it.
And
but
it was
now
disgusting.
And disgusting.
Nice.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. President Biden will deliver remarks later today at the kickoff event of the Investing in America content series, a threat from Hamas with a new directive coming out overnight.
Militants guarding the hostages in Gaza had been given new instructions about what to do if Israeli forces approach. They insinuated that more hostages would be killed if the IDF tries to rescue them.
Fox's Trey Yinks in Tel Aviv. Students returned to class at Columbia University today.
Anti-Israel protesters have already returned to campus over the past few days, marching around the school, hurling pro-Palestinian chants. The school was a hub for these protests last year, and the Anti-Semitism Task Force says there is an urgent need for change, including improved anti-bias training and a new system for reporting anti-Semitism.
Fox's Brooke Singman reporting. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. It is 76 degrees. We've got partly cloudy skies right now in Pensacola. Escambia County Fire Rescue Chief Mark Clark has passed away. According to ECFR, Clark passed away over the weekend, surrounded by family and friends, as well as fellow firefighter brothers and sisters. Clark served as a firefighter for 34 years. SpaceX now hoping to launch its latest historic mission this week after a series of delays. According to a new schedule filed with the FAA, the Polaris Dawn mission is now set for a liftoff on Wednesday from the Kennedy Space Center. They do have a backup launch window planned on Thursday. The mission will carry four civilian astronauts into orbit. It was initially set for August 26th, but that was postponed due to helium leaks and bad weather. The FAA cleared SpaceX flights over the weekend. They had been grounded as an investigation was done into the Falcon 9 rockets. But now, if all goes as planned, the Polaris Dawn mission will include the first ever commercial spacewalk. Now, Senator Rick Scott with a warning for Venezuela's president. Scott posting on X yesterday after Nicolas Maduro issued an arrest warrant for the man who opposed him in the presidential election, Edmundo Gonzalez. Scott calls the warrant unlawful and a line in the sand. He said if Maduro and his buddies crossed the line, there would be hell to pay. Scott also blaming the Biden-Harris administration for what he's calling appeasement policies that he says have emboldened Maduro and his regime. A deputy hurt in a shooting in Lake County, marking a milestone in his recovery. Stefano Gargano was released from the hospital yesterday. The 28-year-old was shot during an ambush in Eustis last month, which killed Deputy Bradley Link. Another deputy was hurt in that incident, but he's already been released from the hospital. Julie Sulpizio is accused of luring the deputies into a home where her husband and daughters opened fire on them. Michael Sulpizio and his wife's daughters, both in their 20s, then committed suicide. Governor Ron DeSantis posting a reminder yesterday on X that the state's Tool Time sales tax holiday is underway. That's going to run through Saturday. DeSantis says this is Florida's way of offering a break to craftsmen, handymen, and hobbyists. Get more information at floridarevenue.com/tooltime. 534 at News Radio. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather.
This meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. Rain chances are increased for this afternoon and evening, about a 60% chance of rain, high near 89 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 74. Going into your Wednesday, rain chances increase even more, 80% chance of showers and thunderstorms, high near 85. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 71. We're going to keep the rain chances around as we go into your Friday with about a 70 to 80% chance of rain. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you, Brooke. And right now, 76 in Pensacola, 78 in Gulf Breeze, 76 in Milton. Our next news at 6 and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
Hi, I'm Ron Helms, and I'm running to be your next county commissioner in District 4. I'm a long-term business owner, military veteran, and ordained clergy. As a fiscal conservative and Second Amendment supporter, I have a passion for public service with strong community engagement. As your next county commissioner, I will have a strong impact on crime and gun violence, affordable housing, and combating high insurance rates. I'm asking for your support and your vote on November 5th.
Paid for by Ron Helms, Democrat County Commission, District 4.
Serving overseas was just the beginning. We might be home from war, but our mission continues in communities all across the country. It's why we're out there in times of peace and crisis, providing meals to the hungry and supplies to the sick. It's why we're giving strength to those who are too weak and bringing resources to those without them. Service doesn't stop when we're done serving. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at vfw.org.
When hurricanes are brewing and heading to the Gulf, tune in to News Radio Pensacola for complete storm coverage you can count on. We have direct reports from the Emergency Management Center and from the National Hurricane Center to give you the latest on the storm's path, strength, and impacts. Stay informed and stay safe with comprehensive hurricane coverage heard on News Radio Pensacola. Now on 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620, and on our News Radio Pensacola mobile app.
News Radio 92.3, working for you. Informative.
We're giving you your live election coverage.
Rick Scott running away with it. 87% of the vote at this point. Matt Gaetz running away.
Local.
We're speaking to Robert Bender, the election supervisor in Escambia County.
I think it's going really well.
Dependable.
Board of County Commissioners, District 1, Steve Stroberger beating Jeff Bergosh.
Up to the minute, down to the wire.
And then District 4, we had Ashley Hoffberger.
Election coverage that's informative, local, dependable. News Radio 92.3.
What do you need, son?
Need to borrow your bow.
Let's drop some lead on those motherfuckers!
Light them up.
They ain't gonna sink this battleship, no way.
Verify our range to target. One ping only.
What's the range now?
200 miles, sir.
They break 150 miles, launch the Alert 5 aircraft.
Yes, sir.
What are you doing? You're slowing down! You're slowing down!
I'm bringing them in closer, Merlin.
You're gonna do what?
I got a good lock. Firing.
Woo! Splash
board! You been!
Good morning, 538 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. And on Fridays at 7:35, we do a thing called Meet Your Tenant Commands, where you get to find out about all the different operations taking place on our bases, NAS Pensacola, Corey Station, Whiting Field locally. And on Friday, we were on the ship, right? I was on the USS McCool. Although I guess technically it's not the USS McCool yet. It becomes the USS McCool at commissioning. So it's just the Richard M. McCool. I don't mean to... All these things I get wrong, you know, what's a bunk versus a rack? I'm so sorry. I try to get them right, and I don't get them all right all the time. Often, you know, not being in the military, so I try. Anyway, had a good chance to talk to a dear friend who is the commanding officer at the Naval School of Aviation Safety, Captain Scott Janet, call sign Mongo. Mongo, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Andrew, good morning. Great to have you via satellite. He's great and underway. Love it.
Oh man, it really is wild. I still it's gonna sink in like 3 hours after we're off the air that we're actually doing this. It's kind of amazing. So let's start. I want to start with this, and I may have mentioned this before, but it is well worth mentioning again. This entire feature, if you appreciate it, Mongo was one of the key people to make it happen. He pushed me and reminded me that we were trying to do it, that I had been wanting to do it, and he has helped facilitate it every step of the way. So he gets absolutely the EP, executive producer, associate producer credits on the movie. So I really appreciate all the help, Scott. Let's talk a little bit about this, the Naval School of Aviation Safety. What is it? What do you guys do?
Yeah, so here in Pensacola, SAS, as we call it, School of Aviation Safety, kind of a continuing education organization here on Pensacola, right? You've heard from the Commodores, from Schools Command, all these folks that get people that are joining the Navy, the Marine Corps, Coast Guard right off the bat and going to learn their craft. Well, we actually get officers that are already out in the fleet, and by fleet, you know, out in operational squadrons deploying, flying aircraft that are painted gray and in combat. So we get them back here, and our mission here is to educate aviation professionals and at all levels, so from enlisted to officer to people going to command, to foster a culture that has safety intrinsically tied to our operations, right? So getting people smart on a safety management system so we can have them go out and be in those squadrons, be a part of those organizations so we can operate safely so we're always ready to answer the bell for the, you know, the President, Secretary of Defense, and have the Navy ready with aircraft ready, people ready. And then, yeah, I'll pause there if you had a question on that, but yeah, I'll give you a little breakdown of the classes that we run.
So let's just try to give people just kind of a picture of the thing. So as you were saying, they come through the various processes at NES Pensacola, at Whiting or Corpus, depending on whether they fly fixed wings or whether they fly helos. They go to other schools, sometimes here, sometimes elsewhere, and eventually they wind up on a big gray boat. And when they're doing that, they're learning how to be a pilot and be a member of a squadron and take on responsibilities. At some point thereafter, a couple of years in, maybe not quite that long, you tell me, then they would come back to NAS Pensacola for training in aviation safety to become a safety officer, right?
That's correct. So very unique about School of Aviation Safety and the command I'm running here is we are, and I've thought about this and try to think back. Red Man, who you talked to, who's a commanding officer of Schools Command, probably a mirror image of me in terms of an organization that has a touch point with every single Navy and Marine Corps squadron worldwide, right? Now, the difference is Schools Command, you don't know what touch point you have because you're starting out, you're learning, and off you go. Here, so we get people that are, every squadron out there has an aviation safety officer. That's kind of lieutenant level, so after, you know, 6 to 8 years in the Navy, or lieutenant commander level, someone going to department head, they come through our aviation safety officer course, because every squadron has to have an aviation safety officer. That person is in charge in their squadron for running safety management system, being trained up with human factors, aerodynamics, reporting, so if there's even a near miss, how do we report that so we can track hazards, identify hazards, get that word out to everybody else. And, you know, God forbid, if there is a mishap, an aircraft mishap, then that person is tasked to lead the investigation on that mishap so we can learn lessons and then not repeat those mistakes in the future. In addition, if you're going to go to command of a squadron, so that's at the commander, the O5, or for the Marines, lieutenant colonel level, you come through a one-week course. So the ASO course, the safety officer course, is about 4 weeks. The commander's course is 1 week. And so like me, for example, I was never an ASO for my squadron. It's one person out of, you know, 20 to 30 to even 60 in a squadron, you have one ASO. So I was never chosen to go be an ASO. But when I had command of a squadron, I was going through the training pipeline. 1 week was here in Pensacola going through the Aviation Safety Commander's Course. So that gives the commanders a top-level view of the programs that they're in charge of and that they got to monitor and what their aviation safety officer is going to do for them. Additionally, a third class that we run, and we do about 11 a year, is a crew resource management instructor course. We train up crew resource management instructors. Those are the folks that go out to the fleet and then run their different aircraft, their platforms, and their crews of how do we talk to each other in an aircraft? How do we communicate? How do we get through barriers, whether that's leadership, experience, knowledge, so that if you and I are flying together and you're sitting there relying on my experience in an airplane, but you see something maybe going wrong or you have a question, but you might be hesitant to say, hey, Mongo, what is, you know, this going on? So we talk about crew resource management so we can really effectively fight in these aircraft when we're out there.
As you may suspect, communication between the planes and the ship, pretty important part of not just operations, but safety, right? Making sure that everybody understands everything that's happening. You know, we sometimes talk about like the Blue Angels having all of their communication, their cadence and their rhythm and their way they communicate to each other, anything that might be awry. Same thing for you guys, even more so because you're in, you know, non-standard, non-planned, you know, maybe military operations. Communication is everything. If you're just tuning in this morning, some of those sounds that you're hearing in the background, the clanking and banging, is because every single door on the ship, the USS Richard McCool, and we are on the ship. This is a broadcast originating at a boat at sea in the Gulf heading over to Pensacola. It's an amazing thing. And that's people going in and out of doors, clanking, and we're right by the bridge. So, in fact, right behind me, behind my back, is the wall on the other side of which is the bridge where they're, you know, driving the ship. So that's why you hear all that sound in the background. Meanwhile, in Pensacola, on land, probably the first time ever that a landlubber like me is on the ship interviewing a seaman like Captain Jaddick on the land. He is the commanding officer of Naval School of Aviation Safety. Scott, I kind of interrupted you. You were about to say a third course or either a fourth course, I forget, that you also conduct at SAS.
Yeah, a fourth course, which we do. This is online, so you have to be an aviation safety officer graduate, but we do a aviation safety manager course once a year online, and that is for people going to major staffs or aviation safety officers or even carriers or ships that have squadrons on them to give them some of those different policies, procedures that they have to follow to run those major staffs. So all told, our schoolhouse, we have 26 military, Navy, Marine, and then government civilian employees. 26 of us run the schoolhouse, and we have a student throughput of around 1,200 a year. And then I was talking about the crew resource management instructors. They also go out and assess fleet-wide, all the Navy and Marine Corps squadrons, they assess their crew resource management programs. So they go out and do assessments. A lot of travel there. But, yeah, you brought up the Blue Angels, and that's a great point there, Andrew. And a lot of times people can kind of scratch their head about that communication and crew resource management. You think of crew, and you just think of people being together in one aircraft. But the Blues are a great example of, here you got six pilots, they're in different airplanes, but yeah, that communication, how they talk to each other, one word here or there, and the impact that can have on the understanding of what's going on with the whole formation.
Absolutely. I wanted to focus on the investigation side, because when I came and, you know, you were so gracious to show me around the facility where you're the CO and where you do the in-classroom training, because, you know, if you're walking down the hallway at SAS, you peek your head in one room and you're going to see, you know, 50 green jumpsuits all sitting there learning lessons on aviation safety. And you showed me some of the resource areas that you have, and one of the rooms you have is, you know, there's just no good way to say it. It's full of mangled metal. It's, you know, mishaps produce physical data, and part of the job of the SAS, the aviation safety officers, is to investigate mishaps and look at what was the cause and figure out from the available data what happened, and that sometimes means some, you know, you're dealing with some pretty serious problems, right?
No, absolutely, and we do have the, and I call it an honor, you know, we treat these things as some of them are a final resting place for some of our fellow warriors, but we have mishap aircraft as well as a parts lab, and to your point, exactly, there are pieces that were, you know, broken or in a crash. But we use those to show for our learning for our students to see if there is an accident, how you can actually look at the parts, and that can tell the story of what happened. You know, were things spinning at the time or were they not spinning? What was operating? As well as using those as lessons to teach from and go forth in their role as an ASO to use those as examples to show people what to not do, right? And to really run
Hey, Scott,
that.
Scott, hang on for just a sec. Okay. Hey, Scott, can you hang on for just a second? We got kind of a rare honor. The captain is getting ready to go on the bridge. His job is to sit in the bridge and drive the ship and make sure everybody knows what they're doing. But I did want him to just say hello to everybody for a second.
How you doing, Captain Baker?
Hey, I'm doing well. We're ship's ready to get pulled into Pensacola and start the week. We're couldn't be honored. It's a great privilege, and just look forward to getting in.
Thank you for having us on your home, and thanks for letting us do this, man. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate all the support of you all and the local press and really the whole community. So we look forward to getting there. We'll be there in a few hours.
All right. I knew that the captain was going to be not really available for time this morning, but I did want to at least catch him and have him say hi to y'all. He has been a fantastic host for us here on board the Richard McCool. Back to Scott Janik. Sorry, Scott, to interrupt you. But, you know, captain and a captain, you understand.
Oh yeah, when Captain Baker shows up, you go all stop, right? No, it's good, and I know we're looking forward to meeting him. Pensacola is looking forward to having him at McCool. It's a little bit of nostalgia for me. My dad was a surface warfare in the Navy on an amphibious ship, a landing ship tank, which is no longer in service.
Oh,
but that,
okay.
That was similar. But that ship had a big ramp on the front that it could pull about a 600-foot. Ship and it would pull up carrying Marines, tanks, trucks.
Yeah.
And the big ramp would drop on the bow so that they could drive off onto the beach. So it's kind of neat seeing the Gator Navy and you getting a touch on it out there. Shout out
Absolutely.
To Mel as you guys have Reveille and you're up and at them.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so go ahead.
No, that's I just, you know, we're running totally out of time, and I just wanted to make sure if there was any final thing. We got about a minute left. If there was any last thing that you wanted to let people know about before we let you go this morning, because your command is, I mean, it's so important because that's what keeps, you know, safety. That's what keeps the pilots alive, keeps the planes in, you know, appropriate order. And it's a crucial command that's based here in Pensacola.
No, absolutely. And there's so many ties over to just regular life and what other people do in industry. You know, I've sat there and had talks with people, whether it's American Magic or the hospitals, you know, and maybe they're talking a sailing boat or they're talking a patient, but really people working together to get something done and making sure it's done effectively. You know, in our case, it's warfighting mission effectiveness. We need to make sure that we are preserving our assets and our people so that we can continually answer the bell when it's rung, and we need to answer it, just like you're seeing firsthand out there with those fine shipmates of ours on the McCool, getting that ship ready to get commissioned. But yeah, just a neat aspect of Pensacola here. And again, as you're doing the series, hopefully the people of Pensacola are really enjoying learning really the volume of training that goes on in this greater Pensacola area for Navy, Marine Corps, and a bunch of other our services. We also do, real quick, we do a international class once a year, so a bunch of our international partners come to learn similar stuff that we're teaching, shorter classes, because we don't have to get into a lot of the U.S. policy or requirements that we have with them. But a real neat treat to be here. And you know, being here since 2018 and really seeing the ties here with the Navy and Pensacola, it's just been a real treat.
Yeah, and I know you spent more of your career in Pensacola than not, and I just think that's cool, all the different things you've done from being the Commodore at Training Air Wing 6, and yeah, just all of it is very impressive. Captain Scott Janik, call sign Mongo. He is the commanding officer of Naval School of Aviation Safety, SAS, a dear friend, somebody who made this whole series possible and continues to help me produce it. Mongo, I'll talk to you again soon, man. Thank you so much for the time. Thanks for what you do.
All right, enjoy that salt air, Andrew. Have a good time.
It was a kind of a surreal experience to be the guy on the ship interviewing the guy from the ship on the land. You know, just all kinds of weird, but I loved it. And Mongo is great. 552 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, you may not remember this, but there may be somebody who does. A couple of years ago, Tim Kinsler, the commanding officer of the base when he was, showed up to civil quarter for the surrender of the city. And they reenacted that scene from Top Gun where Maverick and Goose sing, you know, you've lost that loving feeling. Okay. And Mongo played Goose in the scenario, and Lucky played Maverick in the scenario. So if that, I don't know if it triggers any bells for you, if you aren't sure who he is and want to kind of place it, that's a, probably there's like maybe one person who knows that in memory and that helps at all. So 437-1620 is now the right time to sell your house? That's a good question. It's always a question, right? Is the market going to go up? Is the market going to go down? What is the changing interest rate going to do to that market? Is, you know, are people who've been waiting on the sidelines to do investing, are they about ready to jump back in? Is that going to, you know, are prices going to fall and then go right back up? Or are they going to just fall and fall? Or are they going to hold steady? You know, we don't know. Who knows? Well, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, they're going to have, you know, the best answers to those kind of questions. You're looking at buying a home. What's going to happen behind that house on the undeveloped dead-end street? Is that truly a dead end? Is it an undevelopable, closed off, or is it a right-of-way that could become a subdivision of 500 houses right behind your beautiful home with your kids? That's the kind of question that you want to ask them, and that's the kind of question they'll help you ask so that you make sure to buy the right home. Whether it's buying or selling, you want expert advice, and Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty have it. 175 homes sold last year, and they just love people. That's always been kind of her attitude. Is I just love people. I want to help people, get them informed so they can make good decisions so they can be happy. That helps me sleep at night. 850-723-9158. Or just look her up online, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
A-R-G-O-S, Argos. Go Argos!
Go Argos!
I am Claire Stewart with the University of West Florida. The UWF Historic Trust will be hosting their Open House and Community Day on Saturday, September 7th. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel on September 5th to learn more about Open House and all of the fun activities happening on the site that day. That's Thursday on the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3.
Join Jim's Firearms for a 10th anniversary celebration on September 20th and 21st. They're partnering with local favorites like Badass Coffee, Key Nutrition, and more for an unforgettable event. Indulge in delicious food from La Casita Food Truck and 850 Barbecue. But that's not all. They're having numerous firearm raffles with all proceeds benefiting the Save Underdogs Foundation. Stop by Jim's Firearms at the corner of Sorrento Road and Blue Angel Parkway, September 20th and 21st, to celebrate a decade of community support. Online at jimsfirearms.net.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, Pep Talk. Mornings at 9, right after Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
You don't talk to the colonel. Well, you listen to him. The man's enlarged my mind. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense.
Says pair us together better than Apocalypse Now and Jason Mraz. 5:57 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Mourners remembering Hirsch Goldberg Polan, one of the six hostages found dead in Hamas.
For 23 years, I was privileged to have the most stunning honor to be Hirsch's mama. I'll take it and say thank you. I just wish it had been for longer.
That's Hirsch's mother, Rachel Goldberg. And again, Hirsch, one of the six hostages found in Gaza over the weekend. His parents lived in Chicago, then moved to Berkeley, California. Both spoke at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago as well. The Communications Workers of America now walking away from the table in their negotiations with AT&T. The union released a statement on Monday saying that they're no longer interested in mediation with the company. The union says they believe the mediation was a delay tactic. There's about 17,000 employees on strike across the Mid-South right now. And researchers say there's markers in routine blood tests that may be able to predict the risk of heart disease up to 30 years in the future. A certain type of fat and an indicator of inflammation can predict the risk of heart attack, stroke, and heart disease. The study found women with the highest levels were 1.5 times more likely to have a stroke and 3 times more likely to develop heart disease.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 5:58 here on News Radio 92.3. I don't know if I have enough time really to get into this, but an interesting story about how, you know, Florida professors are reacting against some of the laws that have been put in place that have to do with, you know, for example, not being guaranteed tenure, having to be reviewed basically every couple of years in order to see whether, you know, they should still be teaching or not. They say it's going to chill free speech on their part. I think that's true. Now, the question is whether that's good or not, right? I mean, if before they felt like they could say whatever they want and there was no consequence, that's good if you believe that limitless free speech by public employees who are representing a set of viewpoints and getting paid to teach them to incoming students is always good. Or if you believe that they have gone astray under that liberty and begun to teach things that are actually harmful to the community or to the culture or to the state, and therefore maybe we shouldn't be paying them to do
that. Listen on air at 90.